How long is this gonna take?
I don't know. Maybe 12 hours, hopefully less. I have to find out what drives him.
Or we could just go in there and beat him with a phone book.
No, no, no. For so many reasons, no. Okay, you just need to be patient, all right? It is crucial, crucial that you remain patient.
It's also crucial that you stop wearing this stupid barrette.
What is the problem with this? I mean, you have one on your head.
Yeah, on top of my head, like a normal person.
What is the difference?
Just move on.
Okay, if you enter that room, you could break the bond that we've created, okay? Just please, please trust me on this one. Okay, do you understand how important this is?
Yeah, I do.
And you will be patient?
I will.
Okay. All right. Hello. Coffee? I drink a little more coffee than I probably should.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm Matt Goldberg, the site's managing editor, and with me today are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And Dave Trumbore.
Hello.
We are also joined by Katie Rich, the editor-in-chief of Cinema Blend and co-host of the podcast Operation Kino.
Hello.
And also, before we even go any further, please listen to Operation Kino. It is like one of the smartest film podcasts around. Like, I listen to it and I just feel dumber, like educated, but also like, I don't know movies at all, and that makes me sad. But
I promise it's not me making you feel that way, but I appreciate the compliment.
It's a great podcast. So for today, we wanted to talk about women in cinema, partially because of The Heat came out this weekend, and I'm very glad that it did well. But it sort of raised a larger question about depictions of women in cinema, women in Hollywood in terms of directors, screenwriters, female film critics. And then also there's a question of sexism in films that's both subtle and overt. And so I just wanted to sort of get into these issues. And Katie, I'm really glad that you could join us because not only are you a great film critic and people should definitely check out your stuff over at Cinema Blend, but also because you, I think we were on a set visit or a junket or something, and you related something that someone said in the comments that you've gotten, and it is by far one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life, which is saying something for comment sections.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was, you can't review superhero movies because you're a woman.
Oh, yeah.
That was
all the
gist
time.
Of it. All the time, so it's not just once.
I mean, yeah, there's some variation on that comes up. You know, it happened more often with both Expendables movies. It's like, you can't review action movies because you're a woman, you know, pretending that Kathryn Bigelow has never directed an action movie in her life. Yeah, I mean, you know, commenters, as you guys well know, are going to come up with any reason to discount what you have to say if you disagree with them. But it does tend to be, if you're female, that's what they'll immediately go to first. Like, when writing about Man of Steel, Christy Puchko, who's another writer on my site, we wrote a couple things about Superman, and we got a variation on the comment being like, oh, as soon as I saw this was written by people named Katie and Christy, I checked out. And, you know, it was because we didn't like Man of Steel that much, but that's the kind of the easy tool for them to go to. I mean, they probably insult you guys with something else about you that they're just, you know, grasping at straws. But when you're a woman, it's very easy for them to pick that target.
Yeah, I sort of, it's really interesting that that's sort of what they go to. I mean, it's obviously that they're commenters, but it does seem a little bit more pervasive in a sense. Like, I remember a couple months ago, because they cast Shailene Woodley as Mary Jane in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then on Comic Book Movie, which anyone can contribute to. So this wasn't just a commenter, but like a site that people read begrudgingly. And this person wrote this editorial about why Shailene Woodley isn't attractive enough to play Mary Jane, and it just was there. And I just like,
well, and that was accompanied by the set photos too of just her like, probably 6 o'clock in the morning, like walking from her trailer
and still looking attractive. Like that's
the
weird thing. Like still being above average, like looking good. But this person's like, no, not for me. And it's just like,
she's not airbrushed enough in real life to be hot.
Right.
Exactly. And this sort of raises the question about like depictions of women in film and like how they seem to have to meet a certain standard. And it's not just like, oh, she's not pretty enough to be Mary Jane, but all around, I get very unnerved with like magazines like Cosmopolitan and like Teen Vogue, and I look at that stuff, and if I ever have a daughter, I just want to be like, don't ever read these ever, because this is like the worst image that you could give yourself. And I'm not saying like actresses who like keep in shape and all that stuff are like bad people or like are contributing to image problems, but at the same time, it's like male actors seem to be able to get away with not having to do that as often. I mean, yeah, it helps if you're an attractive male star, but if you're like Seth Rogen or Jonah Hill, you're also going to be fine, or Christoph Waltz, or old, you know, it's like it's easy for men to get older parts and just so on and so forth. So, I mean, what do you guys think about this just to start off with in terms of how women are portrayed in films and what that contributes to? Everyone at once. Everyone. It's not a heavy question.
Well, one of the things that really annoys me is how an older actor can be dating a younger actress. I guess the most recent example would be Silver Linings Playbook, where I know that Jennifer Lawrence was like 21 in the film, and Bradley Cooper was, I think he's in his mid-30s, which
he's
isn't
like 38,
as...
like closer to 40 than you think, I think.
Yeah, and it's this pervasive thing of like in movies, the older guy always gets she's always under 25, it seems like, and that's perfectly acceptable, but you can't have an older woman with a younger man, and I feel like Nancy Myers kind of flipped that on his head with Something's Gotta Give, which I really enjoy for it kind of showing, you know, Jack Nicholson in the movie plays this womanizer who's dating those younger people. He's dating Amanda Peet at the beginning, but it moves into a romance between him and Diane Keaton. So that's one of the big things that annoys me, is seeing that, like, oh, it's totally acceptable for this guy pushing 60 to be dating this 20-year-old, but if you have a younger guy hooking up with an older woman, it's automatically they have to play into the fact that, oh, this is a cougar. They have to draw attention to it, that it's a thing that's happening that's not normal, and it's different. But that's never called into attention when an older man is dating a younger woman.
There was an example with a girl most likely, formerly called Imogene, where Kristen Wiig dates Darren Criss, and they don't call attention to it. It's just a really bad movie, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, well, and she's also like stunted in life, and you know, he's like a college student. Like, it's such a dramatic age difference that it's like not really a great idea. Like, that's not really a great example of like a normal person.
Oh no, absolutely, absolutely. No, you're right. Like Adam's like exams, like, oh, this is just a normal thing for this to happen.
Yeah, well, and you think about The Proposal, which, you know, was this huge hit and kind of revived Sandra Bullock's big rom-com career, and that was her dating Ryan Reynolds, who was younger, but, you know, that was a plot point. Like, it was more important that she was his boss, but the fact that she's older is, you know, where they derive a lot of that humor. They definitely couldn't get away with not saying something about it. Although, sorry, Man of Steel, Amy Adams is older than Henry Cavill, and for the most part, aside from a few crazy trolls on the internet, nobody talked about it.
Because I was not aware of that. Because he looks older. Like they both, and she looks like they both look like they're in their mid 30s.
Yeah, they're in a comparable range.
I think the difference. I'm looking it up right now. Oh, she's 9 years older than him. It's way more significant than you'd think.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Way to go, Amy Adams. You get that young hunk of man.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, I mean, there's those. I mean, that's good for sure. I mean, in terms of like that example, but like we didn't really notice it. Whereas, again, like Adam, what you're talking about, it's very like, it goes. Like I remember seeing, oh gosh, was it A Simple Murder? The one that was a remake of Dial M for Murder with freaking Michael Douglas and Gwyneth Paltrow as his wife, and there's like a 30-year age difference.
A Perfect Murder.
Oh yeah, Perfect Murder.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So yeah, that's okay.
Well, I mean, real life examples of that abound. Like, look at Alec Baldwin and his yoga instructor wife.
Or Morgan.
You know, he and Kim Basinger were around the same age, but they got divorced, and obviously he traded up for someone who is very young.
Or Morgan Freeman and his granddaughter.
It fits into this set of unwritten rules for like females in movies, where like the woman can't be older than the man that she's dating. The woman has to have problems that the man can fix by sweeping her off her feet. Like, the woman's job can't be more important than the man's job, and the man. It just feels like there's a whole a list of things that you see in movies nowadays that feel like they play into this, and the audience just buys it. Like, it doesn't. I mean, when you see a story that's different, it's like you call attention to it yourself because it's so different, because you're like, oh, wow, like I didn't realize that we've been seeing this same story over and over and over again.
Well, it sounds like what you're talking about there is rom-coms, which have this huge problem just being so constricted into this, like, that's why they're so bad these days, is no one is willing to, you know, take a gamble and make them different at all. But then you get the age difference between Amy Adams and Henry Cavill, but Lois Lane doesn't really matter that much to that story. And that it's either you've got that constricted rom-com plot, or you've got women who are kind of there to check a box and be a face on a poster, but who do not matter to the story at all. And no one cares what her job is or anything else, because it's just irrelevant.
Yeah, when I was watching World War Z, I was really I liked the Muriel Enos at the beginning. She was kind of like take charge and doing what she needed to do. And then for the like rest of the movie, she's just there to sit on a boat and answer.
But of course, in the original cut, she's there to sell her body for money.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so God, I guess that's fine. But yeah. That's, I mean, that's another example. I mean, not a rom-com, but just like there's, it's there. Like she's the human MacGuffin for Brad Pitt. Like, oh, he's got to have his family, but Brad Pitt has to be the one on the journey, and she doesn't help out in any way. That's one thing I really liked about Man of Steel is that Lois Lane was more of a partner, and Henry Cavill didn't do the thing like, oh no, it's too dangerous, you can't come. She was like, I'm going to do this, and he was like, okay. You go do this, and I'll do this.
Well, but
and she does have a more important job than him. Like at the end, you know, when he starts off as Clark Kent in the mailroom or in the Daily Planet, she's going to be way
he
more.
Should
important
be in the fucking mailroom. He has no credentials. but Kate, it's interesting you bring up rom coms because a lot of rom coms are written by women. And I was double checking something. I think one of the most abysmal, horrifying films I've seen in the last few years was What's Your Number? Which was basically like women don't have too much sex. You know, if you have sex with – whereas like if for a man, it's like, yeah, whatever. Notch that bedpost. And that was written by Gabriel Allen and Jennifer Crittenden. Like, apparently that was – I don't want to say like it was okay. And of course, you know, screenwriting arbitration is a total mess. And who goes through that? But again, at the same time, their names are on the screenplay. And had it been a success and people had liked it, you know, they would have been – They cash that paycheck, you know, it's that kind of thing. And it's unfortunate, but again, we can go through other film, we can go through other rom-coms, and I see female screenwriters, when it comes to movies, now television is very different, but when it comes to movies, a lot of rom-coms seem to be written by women.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one part of, you know, the limited roles for female screenwriters. And you know, maybe I'm giving them too much credit being like, oh, they're put through the studio. But I do think the kind of stories that are allowed to exist and come out from any screenwriters are really limiting because studios are afraid of changing anything up that way. I mean, think about Casey Wilson, who was on SNL and was amazing on Happy Endings. She wrote the screenplay for Bride Wars, which is awful. The movie's horrible. And if you, like, I interviewed her and her writing partner at Sundance for another movie they'd made together, and you bring that movie up to them, and the look on their faces, you can tell it was just taken away from them. So it's another way that, like, you know, there are women in Hollywood, but they're not really being given the power to change any of the status quo.
And, I mean, obviously, I mean, definitely in that status quo. And then there doesn't seem like they're even getting a crack at anything. Like, because the rom-com, it doesn't cost a lot of money to make a rom-com. That's the other thing. It's very cheap. But, like, is any woman like getting a shot at a film that costs over $100 million other than like, and I'm going to butcher her name, like Leda Caligaris,
Caligaris,
like, and I think, I don't know how much the Twilight movies cost, probably not that much, but, and Marty Noxon, she got, but other than like those two, it's like and there's a lot more blockbuster films. I mean, those are tent poles and that's what studios are really relying on. So, and then of course, when it comes to directors, just not even there. And people like, well, Kathryn Bigelow, and like, she's the exception.
That's it. It stops,
she's
the only one. Kathryn Bigelow.
Exactly. And what, oh gosh, who was it? Was it Patty Jenkins, I believe, who came close to directing Thor 2?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I don't know what happened there. I mean, that may have just been Marvel playing hardball, which is what they do with everyone, but it was like so close, and then no.
Well, we all got so excited, and she was like, oh, yeah, so I can ask for more money? And they're like, no, goodbye.
No. It's not because you're a woman. It's because we're Marvel. And
we're cheap as hell.
Yeah, exactly. So there are those issues. And I guess the question it raises is, you know, is it overt sexism? And it's so hard to say. I mean, on the one hand, you have, like, Amy Pascal running. She still runs Sony, right? Like, so one of the most powerful women in Hollywood, but
Kathleen Kennedy running.
I forgot about that. Freaking
Stacey Scheer.
So you have like women in these positions of power, but then, you know, it's not like really. I mean, when it comes to the actual filmmakers, what's going on there? Is there any theories? I have my own, but I feel like I'm dominating the conversation, which I don't want to do. Dave laughs because he's like, yeah, you do.
I just laugh. I don't know. My forte is kind of more with like the action-y type movies rather than rom-coms and things like that. And those don't really seem to have changed all that much over the last, I don't know, few decades. There's always kind of these roles that both women and men are kind of just slotted into, and those really haven't changed. The faces have changed. The stories changed a little bit here and there, but you know, I mean, I'll throw out an example, like a Michael Bay movie. Like, you see just set photos for a Michael Bay movie, and it's like at some point he's just like, all right, bring on the, you know, young 20-year-old attractive women to fill whatever the hell scene he has going on there. It's just like nothing in the action world has really kind of changed, which I was going to wait to bring this up until we started talking about The Heat. But The Heat is kind of interesting because it does shake those conventions up a little bit. But we can get into that a little bit later. As far as the directors and things go, I was kind of racking my brain to try to come up with just big name female directors that have, you know, any kind of real, like a long list of films that have really kind of stood out. And I was having a tough time with it. So I don't know if like what names kind of jump off the tongue for you guys. Is there anybody that really stands out besides Catherine Bigelow, like you already mentioned?
I mean, well, you've got Nancy Myers, you've got Nora Ephron, you've got, you know, women directors who are working in less revered genres and,
right,
you know, by male audiences. But in terms of blockbusters, like it's,
exactly,
it's nightmarish.
Yeah,
it's almost like they're pigeonholed. It's like, oh, you're a woman, you understand romantic comedies and that's about it. Like, that's really all that they're like, oh, you can adapt a Nicholas Sparks book and you'll be fine with that. We'll just give that to you and you can play with that over here.
Actually, I wonder if a female director has ever done a Nicholas Sparks adaptation, because usually that's men doing. I'm gonna look this up right now that you brought it up.
Yeah, that's the first like name of like rom-com that I can come up with. Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense.
Is there a lot of calm in a Nicholas Sparks movie? Is there a lot of comedy? intentional comedy?
Intentional? Probably not.
No, but...
Accidental? Absolutely.
While you're looking that up, I would like to say, I read an article on Film School Rejects, was about a month ago, I guess, and the writer, whose name escapes me at the moment, made the point that it's not... or made the argument that it's not overt sexism. It boils down to money, and that studios are scared and they don't want to hand these franchises over to untested names. And so it's not the fact that they're a woman. It's just the fact that they don't have the resume. But my feeling is, I believe that's true to an extent, but ultimately you take chances on everyone. At some point you hand a guy, you hand Joseph Kaczynski, you hand him Tron Legacy. Because we like your commercials. And honestly, there's a lot of women on TV who are doing great stuff, like Michelle McLaren on Breaking Bad, and there are others as well, and I'm sorry. And, I mean, Patty Jenkins was doing The Killing. And so they're working, they're out there, and they're doing independent films. Like, it's not that there are no female directors and we just can't find any. It seems like they're on the same path, but when it comes to other projects, they're getting offered to men.
Yeah, because I mean, nowadays we're seeing it kind of looks like Hollywood's getting cheap, because they're bringing all these indie directors to do the big franchise. Like, you've got Godzilla, and I mean, look at Colin Trevorrow. He did Safety Not Guaranteed. You could find like any number of indie films that are at Sundance and stuff, and find a female director there that's made a film on the same kind of scale as Safety Not Guaranteed. And why not give her Jurassic Park 4?
Right, and so, and I have no idea, and I did this, I know, and it was so frustrating, because I did this panel for Eat, Drink, and Be Indie, which is sponsored by the Atlanta Film Festival, and I was just talking about movies, and I'm talking about my job, and it was sort of an open conversation, and someone just asked me about roles for women in Hollywood, and it's like, okay, I have no good answer to this, and I feel... I would love to have a definitive answer to this, but there is none. Or maybe there is. I don't know. There is? Okay, good.
No, I mean, not that I'm like the be-all, end-all.
No,
I mean, there's
but
all...
it's not, I'm just but not the, being crazy, okay?
Like, when you guys ask if it's, like, misogyny or if it's just, you know, people being scared, I mean, those are part of the same thing. Like, that's how misogyny becomes institutionalized, is everyone's like, well, we have, you know, we don't think that women are going to come to this movie, so we're not going to do it. And you marginalize an audience and you marginalize a gender of filmmaker slowly but surely. And, you know, in Hollywood, everyone's trying to chase money, and they make a ton of money by making really macho movies, until then they make Bridesmaids and they're like, oh shit, we have no idea what makes money anymore. And then Melissa McCarthy somehow miraculously becomes a star, and that is supposed to change their mind. But, you know, you get one Melissa McCarthy movie, and then you get 10 superhero movies, and, you know, you can, the limited imagination for finding movies starring women that will make money is trumped by everyone knowing that you make Transformers 5 and do just fine.
Well, that brings up a good point, because we hear like every day about how like studios are trying to figure out how to get people in seats, how to make money in theaters. And we're seeing more and more that the majority of audiences going to these movies are women. Women are coming out for movies. You look at, I think Monsters University was like 54% women. The Heat was like 65%. If you look at the numbers, like Magic Mike was a huge turnout.
Yeah.
There's this audience that will come out if you make the right movies. And why aren't we giving... Like, why do you think Hollywood is – I mean, I thought after the Hunger Games, things would surely change. And I know we have, like, Divergent coming out and stuff like that, but there's still – those still feel like niche properties. They're like, okay, well, only if it's, you know, Twilight-y, only if it's based on a YA novel. But as we've seen with The Heat, I mean, this is an action comedy. Like, there's no need for a qualifier that it's the female action comedy. It's an action comedy. Like, why aren't we seeing more of other genres? Why do you think studios are afraid? And that goes into why not bring in a woman to take over one of these things? Why not ask a female to write or direct one of these things?
Well,
to me, that seems a numbers game. It seems like there's just – I mean, I don't know. I'm not inside the studio meetings, obviously. But it seems like there's just a bunch of dudes sitting around. They're just like, oh, how do we make movies for women? Someone find me a woman. That's what it seems like to me. It just seems like they're just going to go fishing and try to find some – a female director, writer, producer, something, somewhere. And I feel like it's just a numbers game of them being slow in the transition of maybe trying to cater to that market. Like Katie was saying, you know, it is all about money at the end of the day for the studios. So I think they'll come around to that eventually. I don't exactly know why it's been so slow in coming.
And also men will go to women – or women will go to men movies, but right. Men won't go to women movies. I mean, you're not – like the audience for The Host, I'm sure – you know, The Host didn't really make any money, but I'm sure that was like 80% female or something, whereas Fast and Furious 6 was way more balanced. Even if it tipped more male, you're going to get more women in macho movies than men in women movies.
Although it would also
– I was
– oh, Adam, you go ahead.
Well, I was talking with my girlfriend about this, the same thing that Katie just said last week. I was asking her what she thought about females like coming out to movies and females' roles in movies. And she said she equated it to like books. She said that she is just as likely to pick up a Jane Austen novel or a Charlotte Bronte novel as she is a Charles Dickens novel or a sci-fi book. But men won't go – men won't seek out Pride and Prejudice. Men aren't going to go to that. She said that she thinks that women are more easily able to – relate to characters, be it men or female, but guys have a much harder time relating to a female protagonist. So she said maybe these studios are looking at these movies and say, oh, guys aren't going to come to that movie, so I'm not going to pick it out. And because The Room is 99% men, they're all going to say, oh, you know, this movie's not worth it. It's not going to make any money because no one's going to want to see this. Guys aren't going to want to see this.
But I would also, you know, I would also say, though, I mean, you know, bring up The Host, and there are these female-centric films, but at the same time, it would help if they were good. Like, I mean, we've had Elektra and we've had Catwoman, and it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you just – you have these good characters here that could, you know, and you just botch them to hell and back. So that's sort of frustrating for me. It's like you have a property here that actually could have crossover appeal, and it just tanks because it looked bad from the get-go. I mean, there's that issue as well, so I don't think we should overlook that.
Yeah, but no one's ever going to say, oh, well, Green Lantern didn't do well, so superhero movies with men are
impossible. Oh, absolutely.
Impossible.
No, exactly. I agree. No, it's kind of crazy that should all be hung on a couple films when, I mean, there are, you know, repercussions for Green Lantern. It's just not in a gender way. So that is frustrating.
But then you have good ones like Haywire coming out, and no one knows that, like, that completely bombed.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, that's a mystery that I cannot solve. No idea why Haywire
makes all the money. It has a stacked cast, too.
Yeah.
Nope.
Maybe if it came out now, because Channing Tatum's a thing. But I guess, I mean, people didn't turn out for White House Down, so.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so heartbroken about that, too. I don't want this conversation about The Heat to be like, yes, The Heat succeeded over the macho movie. Because, like, really, everyone should have seen both of them.
Yeah, it would have been a great weekend for both. I would have been perfectly fine. Although, honestly, I'm a little happier that The Heat... Not at the expense of White House Down, but for me, there was more to lose if The Heat tanked.
Yes,
because they're going to keep making White House Down. Like, big, dumb action movies aren't going anywhere. Channing Tatum...
They have two of them this year.
Exactly. Yeah. Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx will be fine. Roland Emmerich will be fine. Everyone who was involved, their careers will go on. Whereas if The Heat had tanked, though, that could have been like, oh, fucking hell. But thankfully, yeah. It was really good. And just to sort of start talking about that, there was a lot that I liked about that film, but I was reading through the comments, which usually is a mistake, but occasionally you get a good response. And there was someone who's like, no, it's not clever, it's not good. And this commenter's response was, that the reason that Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock's characters couldn't be described as strong, which I thought they were, was because all the men around them were weak. Which, first, I disagree with that contention. I think there were some who were weak.
Yeah, did they not see Demian Bashir? He's like killing, he's like the best boss ever.
Exactly.
Marlon Wayans?
Marlon Wayans, I would dispute. He might not be the strongest character.
But, like, they're not always, like, when Sandra Bullock, like, storms the house, it's not that, like, all of her coworkers are weak. It's just that they're not as smart as she is. Like, that's the issue. But I thought about it. It was still, like, a thoughtful comment. I thought about it for a little while. And my feeling was, then by that rationale, we're still only defining strong women in relation to men. And it's like can't be – I think they're strong because of how they play off each other. Like, they're big personalities, and they balance each other out. That's what I like. That's one of the things I liked about it.
Well, what I thought was so cool about the way that they're strong is that they make them strong, but also, you know, weak and relatable, but not at all in this typical way you get from a typical female role, where it's like, oh, she's awkward and she trips over things. You've got them. And when I wrote my review, I was like, they're both assholes. Like, they're really mean and like not, and they have these personality traits that have nothing to do with being female. They're just bossy and rude, and they take over, you know, everyone around them, and they bulldoze people. And that's something that's not gendered, but it makes them really interesting characters, and it makes their relationship to each other interesting. And the fact that they are women affects the way that people perceive their assholishness, but it's not that they are assholy in a way that's specific to women, if that makes any sense.
It does. I mean, I think one of the things that sort of, it's interesting, like, they're not, the film isn't saying, like, oh, women are supposed to act some way, and they don't act that way. They are assholes. If anyone behaved that way, they would still be assholes. But at the same time, one of the things I liked about it is that you notice that they are all surrounded by men. Like, they're either, whether it's in the police department or the FBI, like, that whole strike team is men, and then we only really see men. There's, like, one scene where you do kind of see, like, a few women, like, in sort of this meeting. But for the most part, it's like they're the only women there. And the film comments on it. It's like, we're not supposed, I think Sandra Bullock says, like, you know, I know we're not supposed to say this, but it is tough being a woman in this field. And I like that the film addressed that, that it just simply wasn't, you know, we're not going to acknowledge this at all.
Yeah, they definitely just threw that out front and center. I mean, spoiler alert, when a guy gets shot in the dick, that's kind of a pretty bold statement that they're making some sort of gender-related comment here. Yeah, they did address it, and they addressed it almost breaking the fourth wall and just almost talked directly to the audience about it as they're, like, dressing down their superiors, and then they're kind of finding their own independence towards the end of the film. I thought they did a great job with that, and I don't know if that's Feig's involvement there or the writer, but
Katie Dippel,
it definitely,
who writes for Parks and Rec, which is an amazing show with a great,
which is television has, like, the strong female characters now, and it's kind of like finally moving into the theaters, and I think Katie Dippel has a lot to do with this. I mean, obviously Bullock and McCarthy and Feig are all great, but I think that, you know, this started with the script by her, and I like the fact that they address not only the, you know, how hard it is to be a woman, but, like, the men's reaction to her, to them being women and saying, like, you know, your emotions are going to get in the way, you need to get out. And I also like the fact that they didn't, like, the movie, they didn't get fixed or turn, like, okay by becoming pretty. It's like, oh, let me take this bobby pin out of your hair, and then you need to dress a little better. Like, they didn't put on makeup and get dressed better at the end of the movie.
Or that there was,
like, oh.
Yeah, or that there was, like, a man who, like, balanced them out. Like, they met a guy, he teaches her to, like, soften.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that happened. No, like, I'm not just making that shit up.
Oh, yeah.
It's a version of what you're used to seeing. Like, if you just take two other guys and put them in this exact same role, give them the exact same script for the most part, you know, you've got, like, two strong personalities that clash, but they have to work together. I mean, we've seen that a million times. And then they have, like, this sort of bonding experience where they blow off steam at a bar. I mean, you could literally take Bullock and McCarthy out of there and put, oh, I don't know, Wahlberg and Ferrell in there, and it's like, not saying the exact same movie, but I'm saying that it wasn't like sort of wasn't a gender washout, you know. So they just made great characters, and they got on well together throughout the film, and it just made an entertaining movie. And it's something we really haven't seen before with two women in the lead role. So I like the way that they handled it. I was impressed.
And one of the criticisms I kind of kept reading about The Heat is, like, it's formulaic. And it's like, yeah, it's formulaic. I mean, and no one sort of, I mean, the film isn't even, like, no one ever said, like, this is going to, like, break narrative boundaries. Yeah. And honestly, a lot of films are formulaic, but they rarely get called on it. It's just, there is a formula to these things. And my preference is the execution good? Right. And I think with the Heat, it's pretty top notch. I mean, not only in terms of, you know where it's going to go, but I think Bullock and McCarthy just complement each other so well. Just, I mean, not only in terms of performances, because you can see that Bullock is probably more to the script and her strength is in reactions, because some of her reactions are just amazing. And then, like, McCarthy, like, can sort of freewheel it a bit. Like, there are definitely some scenes that you can tell that she was coming up with, like, different stuff to throw out there just to keep it going, and that they probably chose, and that they just went with some of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is another movie that's been kind of, it wasn't as strong as it could have been because of the trailers and stuff that they released. And we've talked about that before, how these days, for whatever reason, trailers seem to want to give away the entire movie, all the best beats. So it was nice to see that they at least had a couple different different takes and different scenes. I don't know if that's Feig's style or not, to just shoot various takes, especially with McCarthy's sort of improv style. That she's capable of. But it was nice to see some differences from the trailer, but for the most part, it took a lot of the punch out of it. Yeah. So that's...
My favorite jokes weren't in the trailers, and there's like some of my favorite lines this year in it. So.
Well, and the thing is, they only had one theatrical trailer, unless I'm mistaken.
There was a theatrical,
like,
and a red
really
band.
There was... Yeah, and that's it. There really weren't that many trailers, which I was really thankful for. I felt like I was pretty unspoiled on the movie. I mean, there were a couple of the same scenes that you saw over and over again. But like in the, you just see the, saw the same trailer playing over and over again, and then they used alternate takes. But I felt like they did a pretty good job of keeping stuff fresh and new.
Did you guys feel like it should have been shorter though?
No.
Yeah, definitely. No. At least like 10-15 minutes I could have cut
it's like,
out.
It's the same problem as Bridesmaids and like everyone in Judd Apatow's movies. Like there's just this inability to cut.
Oh, I felt this was much tighter than Bridesmaids. I didn't feel it was.
It's
long
definitely
at all.
Tighter than Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids is definitely more sprawling, but I think this. I mourn the loss of the 90-minute comedy. I don't know they've gone. I think every movie should be 90 minutes long unless they have a really good reason not to be. And yeah, I think this would have been pretty close to great at 90 minutes, and it's a bit too long this way.
Okay, I mean I can totally get that. For me, I was just like so into it. But just talking about the marketing, you reminded me of something that they airbrushed the poster.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, and that's just, it's just nuts, because you would like. I mean, again, like it's not that airbrushing posters is new, but it's like no one was like airbrushing like Jonah Hill to be like, I'm not meaning to like rip on Jonah Hill, but I mean we're all
Jonah Hill.
I mean I'm sure he's fine. I have nothing.
I think he's all right.
Yeah, I have nothing. I'm just trying to think of like another actor, you know, who is, you know, no one's airbrushing John Goodman. Let's just put it that way. Like, but no one's airbrushing Kevin James. And I think Melissa McCarthy is way more talented than he is. But again, like the thing is like someone in that marketing department been like, we can't, no one's going to go see this if Melissa McCarthy looks like she weighs that much.
See, but that makes no sense to me, because it's like, that's the reason that you kind of cast her. You didn't cast two like incredibly attractive, whatever, fitting whatever standards you wanted. Like, you want Melissa McCarthy and you want Sandra Bullock. So I can't even wrap my head around the fact that they would try to airbrush her into something different.
And everybody knows what she looks like. Like, right. She's this very recognizable star who a lot, and she's had, you know, these three huge hits in a row. She's on television. Like, right. Everyone knows what Melissa McCarthy looks like. You see her movies for that. I would say I admire what the movie does with having the way that they deal with her character's exes, and how she keeps running into like guys who like she's just completely broken their hearts, and they never really resolve that. Like, that's not, I kind of expected like someone to come back in the end, and they just don't really care about that. But I love the idea of her just as this heartbreaker that the movie takes completely at face value, and you get why these guys are so into her. It's amazing that they just go with it and have nothing being like, well, for a woman who looks like that, she gets a lot of guys. Like, no, whatever. Guys would be into someone that confident. It works.
And the funny
works.
Thing is, it's sort of the opposite the way that they handle Bullock's character, too, is because she's obviously attractive, but because of the way her personality is, she kind of, her character's personality, she drives people away from her, whether it's in the workplace, romantically. The only, you know, the only companion that she has up until the point she meets McCarthy is a neighbor's cat. So, I mean, that's what a great way to handle that character, though, too. You just make her so repulsive in her personality that even, you know, she can't even keep a cat.
Yeah, she's a crazy cat lady without her own
crazy
cat.
Crazy cat lady with a neighbor cat.
That was such a good joke. That was maybe my favorite joke in the movie.
And they kept coming back to it, too, which was smart. And the way that they ended it, too, that was pretty
Oh, yeah,
well done.
During the credits. Yeah. God, that. fucking slayed me. And if you stay all the way through the credits, you'll see another joke about
that. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't stay.
See,
nothing
popped up for me. What popped up for
you?
Well,
if you go sit through the end of the credits, like, it shows the credits, and then, like, the last image of the credits is the photo of her holding the cat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's just a little thing, but it's still, I mean, I did really enjoy that joke. And, but again, it's weird because it's not like every. Apparently, they also airbrushed her for Bridesmaids a little bit. But
yeah, if you look at the poster.
But then, like, Identity Thief, it's like, no, this is what she looks like, and that was a hit. It's a terrible fucking movie, but, you know, credit to the marketing department, I guess, for making, and even then, like, she doesn't look good in the posters, but, like, that's intentional, because, like, Jason Bateman doesn't look good either. It's, like, this horrible, sweaty close-up of both of them that looks like they were made out of plastic. It's just, ah, but, you know, there you go.
Go ahead, Dave. Well, we live in a culture where people are saying that Shailene Woodley is ugly, so, like, it's so disappointing. Like, I can remember, like, I got really, really angry last year because these commenters during Breaking Bad were talking about how much of a bitch Skyler White was for ruining Walt's plans, and Walt is a villain. He is a horrible person, and Skyler is, like, the closest thing to, like, a moral compass on that show, and people are getting, like, angry and, like, viciously upset with her for ruining Walt's plans and being against
ruining
Walt's.
His drug lord plans. I can't believe she did that.
Well, I'm interested to see what – I know this movie did really well this week, and I'm interested to see what audiences say, because I feel like her culture is just so messed up. Like, I don't know if I even remember, like, during Bridesmaids, people were – like, guys were saying, like, oh, that looks like a chick flick. I don't really want to see it, just because it has women in the movie, and I don't really understand that.
Well, I think it got, like, an A- cinema score, and not to, like, hold up cinema score is, like, it's not a judgment on the quality of the film, but, I mean, it is what the audience reacts to, which is why, like, a film like Killing Them Softly gets an F, because it's like, fuck America, and people are like, no, I don't think I will go for that.
Well, you go into a movie like this wanting it to be really funny and mm-hmm. entertaining, and it is. Like, it's exactly what they're selling you, and movies this funny, just, I mean, you see how few comedies get this well-received. Like, it's mm-hmm. really hard to find a movie. Like, I think probably the last comedy I liked this much was 21 Jump Street, which is a buddy cop movie. It's the genre's coming back, I guess. Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting, like, the other, like, big comedy this summer is This Is the End, which is a completely male-dominated film. Like, mm-hmm. Emma Watson pops up for a little bit, and, like, there's that scene at the end, like, at the beginning where every celebrity is in it, and that's it. So, I mean, it is sort of, I mean, and I think they also, I think both films had pretty much equal opening weekends. Granted, one was up against Man of Steel, but still.
Hey, they had 2 extra days.
They did have 2 extra days.
They tried to bump an extra day or something.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So, it held well in subsequent weekends, though.
Right. So there's those reactions. Katie, one of the things I did want to ask you about, though, is sort of, you know, being a female film critic, like, what is your – because you sort of just coming from a different experience. One of the reasons I'm glad I had you on, because if not, I mean, I would have tried to find someone else. But my most important thing was, let's not have 3 dudes talk about women in cinema.
We had this problem on our podcast when we talked about black actors, and people just got so mad at us. And I was like, I don't think we were being – I mean, we're all white people. I don't. Yeah, but yes. It is valuable to have another person's perspective when you're talking about things very specific.
And also to mention that Katie is one of FlavorWire's 15 great film critics you ought to be reading. So.
Oh, yeah. That was such a crazy, flattering thing.
So, I mean, what has it been like for you, like, sort of, like, being in this profession and like,
oh,
watching these films? Because, for me, I'm a white guy, and it's like, I just go along and, like, go about my day. Like, that's just – and people – I think – the most anyone's gotten on me for is being Jewish, and, like, that's not anyone. That's, like,
there's some pretty awful things said about you for being Jewish, though,
in the comment section, but I laugh that off. Like, I laugh that off, because it's, like, so fun. Because it's also, like, 2 people. Like, that's the other thing. Like, it's not a – and it's also that – I think it's just 1 guy, too. Like, I think the
probably.
Username is the same, so that makes it even funnier. Like, he comes in to, like, drop – he's like, oh, man, Goldberg reviewed a film. Time to crack out the anti-Semitism.
You Jews have no role in Hollywood.
I know. I'm sorry, but Kate, that was awesome. Kate, but, like, so what has your experience been like? Because you've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, it's probably the same as you, where I go about my business and I feel like I don't really notice anything. And then when I get weird comments like that, I just, like, anyone who's looking at this and being like, you are a woman, you can't review this, they're wrong. And they're so blatantly wrong. Like, I'm not insecure about being female and reviewing movies. Like, if someone's like, you don't know enough, or like, you know, your opinion on this is wrong because of these objectively provable things, like, that I get upset about. But that kind of thing is just so, you know, dinosaur behavior. And, you know, no one's ever saying this to me in person. I have the power to delete these comments, which is awesome. It's incredibly rewarding to delete all these idiots' comments. I mean, the only thing that happens is, like, you know, I go about knowing that the assumed default experience in the world is being a white man. And that's the way that almost the entire world works. And I've kind of accepted that, like you guys have, being white men. And every now and then I stick my head out. I'm just like, oh, or if I see a movie like The Heat, or if I see like someone like Sarah Polley emerge as a female director, and I'm like, oh yeah, it is different. It's different when you see this perspective. And when you recognize that, I think everyone can recognize that, you know, you don't have to be a woman to see a female director or writer or star and be like, oh yeah, she's bringing something new to the table. But it is a relief when that comes around. And he's kind of like the toad in the boiling water, and you don't really realize that, you know, things are kind of weighing on you until all of a sudden you see something different. You're like, oh shit, I've only seen movies starring men for the last 6 months. So that's nice when that changes.
Well, but also, I mean, there's still that sort of relationship issue in terms of like the movies we're seeing, in terms of like to the lack of female we're seeing. So like, because it's so male dominated, you do get a film like The Heat, which is like, oh, it's a female buddy cop film. And it's like, yes, I understand that, like, they've all been male, but, like, can we just not take it as just a great buddy cop film? And unfortunately, we can't. And actually, that's kind of just a standard description that even, like, trades will go for. And I was looking through some of our past stories, and there was a film, like, a couple years ago called Desperados that was in development that was described as a female Hangover. And then there's that untitled female Expendables that's sort of in development hell. And what was... Here's the thing. I wouldn't be against that, because I would love to see, like, Sigourney Weaver and, like, Linda Hamilton, like, just kicking ass. Like, I thought I'd see that, think that'd be awesome. Unfortunately, the film got as far as casting as Gina Carano top-lining, and I think Katie Sackhoff might have been in it. And, like, that's as far as it ever got in terms of what we've heard so far. And, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, I don't want to be like, well, Sigourney Weaver can carry an action film. I think she could carry an action film with a lot of female action stars, just like, because it's not like Sylvester Stallone carried The Expendables. No one went to go see Bullet, you know, Bullet to the Head, because it's like, oh man, I love how roided out he is. It's just,
I don't think anyone went to see it, period.
Exactly. And so it's not like people are going to see Stallone, but like, you see that ensemble. And I mean, I would like to see a female Expendables, just because, you know, that cast could be awesome. Like, I can buy, like, women, like, in those roles. So, but I'm not getting that film. And I think, honestly, I think it's sort of an underestimation, because I think men would go for that movie. They've gone for Terminator. They've gone for Aliens. And it was, you know, I think they, if you've already bought those actresses as action heroes once, like, they bought Lena Headey as, like, Sarah Connor in Sarah Connor Chronicles. Like, I mean, that got canceled, but no one was watching.
She was the badass villain in Dread, which nobody saw.
Yeah, exactly.
She's on a
and
losing streak.
So that
there.
Movie should be made, and Lexi Alexander should direct it, because she did Punisher Warzone, a film I will keep plugging every time I can, because it cracks me up. And it's good. It's the only R-rated Marvel film, and it's really entertaining. So, yeah.
Well, and we've heard the rumors that Star Wars could have a female protagonist. I feel like that could be a game changer in a way. I mean, not to say that like the Hunger Games and all these other like film like Haywire and stuff aren't game changers, but hopefully like that, you can't describe that as the female Star Wars. Like if this happens and if it's a good movie and it has a female protagonist leading an entire trilogy, maybe they will finally realize that you don't have to say like, oh, that's the girl Star Wars. Like, no, this is Star Wars.
Yeah, no, that's...
there's no qualifier needed. This is Star Wars. So, you know, maybe we can start making movies with females in the lead now, because it's
Although,
not a problem.
If we wind up with just like, you know, no one's favorite part of Star Wars is Luke Skywalker. Like if we wind up with a woman being in like the wide-eyed innocent lead role, like I would almost rather her not be the lead and give a woman the Han Solo part. I mean, this is all total speculation, so I have no idea what's going to happen.
It
almost seems like a low risk to be like, I'm going to have Star Wars and a woman's going to be in the lead. You're like, oh, good for you. It's so risky for you to do anything with a Star Wars movie, because you know a billion people are going to see it.
Well, I would say like, because a billion people are going to go see it, go nuts. And yet I think they'll be
exactly.
fairly
Put
conservative.
An alien in a lead role, whatever. Yeah. Make it a robot.
finally, IG-88 will get his spinoff film.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, that the same thing can be applied to the Marvel or the DC movies, too. I mean, Wonder Woman's been kicking around on TV or in film for, Jesus, a number of years, and there's just no forward movement on any of that. And I don't really understand why. I mean, I've heard different excuses for it, but... You know, and one of the top excuses seems to be like, we're not sure that, you know, all the men are going to come out to see that. So they're worried about alienating their male comic book audience. Whereas, I don't know, like you said, with Star Wars, pretty sure if you make a Wonder Woman movie and it looks decent, everybody's going to come out and see that. I could be wrong, but...
I think a Wonder Woman movie is more being held back by the DC Universe shakeout. Like, I think maybe once they figure their shit out in like 10 years, we'll have a Wonder Woman movie.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes as well as Marvel's. Experiments have.
Yeah, and the question is when is Marvel going to get to the game? Like, that. I mean, now that they're set, like, what does their slate look like, and what movies they're... I mean, they've had, like, good female characters in it, and I mean, like, if you have Black...
I mean, two?
You have two so far. Scarlet Witch, I mean, I hope that Gamora is going to be... That's the female character, right, in Guardians, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
In Guardians
Drax,
of Galaxy,
yeah. I was thinking, like, is it... Drax is the male character, because that is the most masculine name ever, if you... Drax the Destroyer. And,
I feel like the big thing stopping the female superhero movie is, you know, studios have to do their models to run the numbers and see, like, okay, what mm-hmm. budget can we get? And the only, like, I think the two movies that would pop up would be Elektra and Catwoman, and based on the models, they would say, oh, this isn't worth doing. But those models make no sense because this isn't the Elektra or Catwoman. So
yeah, and the world of superhero movies is so different than it was when those movies were made.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then I guess the question is, like, what... Because for me, Wonder Woman seems pretty obvious. Like, if... For me, it's like, who is the female superhero? And, like, my mind immediately goes to Wonder Woman. But, like, for like in the Marvel Universe, who is, like, the big female superhero?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I was even sitting here trying to think of one. I'm like, well, maybe that's why Marvel hasn't done it yet. There's not really a marquee female hero character that they have. They're all on teams or they're all partnered up. I could be wrong.
Doesn't speak well of Marvel. So.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and nobody wants a Black Widow. I mean, Black Widow had great scenes in the Avengers, but no one wants a Black Widow spinoff, myself included. Like, I have no interest in that.
We've learned quite a bit about her, and so. Yeah.
See, that's what drives me crazy. Is DC has much stronger female heroines that can stand alone and do their own thing.
They have Black,
and they haven't made any movies about them. I mean, Wonder Woman aside, you don't have Batgirl. You don't have. There's plenty of other
Black Canary.
Alicia Silverstone. Come on, guys. Back
yeah, her standalone. Her standalone
yeah,
movie that
the
never
fact won. That because of this Marvel DC stuff, we're probably never going to get Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman movie drives me crazy. I hate that. Because, I mean, come on. That's the most obvious thing now that he's got all the power in the world. Like, let the guy do it.
Well, I mean, really, like, Warner Brothers had their chance, and because they didn't have their shit together. You know, although I will say this about Wonder Woman, and, like, one of the reasons it may not have happened yet is, like, there is awareness of Wonder Woman, but at the same time, there's awareness of her as a character, but not in the sense of really her origin, like, or who she is. Like, if I tell you who Batman or Spider-Man or, like, Superman is, you can pretty much know who that is. Like, it's just so culturally ingrained of, like, how they got their powers and who their villains are and what their lives are like. But if you ask someone, like, name Wonder Woman's nemesis, like, arch nemesis, like, who is that?
Not a clue.
I was going to say Cheetah,
I believe it's Ares. Which is...
If you're going to go with, like, the pantheon of the gods.
I mean, that's
thing,
just... Yeah. And to be honest, that is only because I just played Injustice. And, like, that is who is dropping.
Yeah, but
in
guess
for
what?
Her.
You don't know what that character's origin is? Perfect time for an origin movie. This is why, like, we've had
I agree, but I'm wondering if, like, maybe, like, one of the turnoffs for Green Lantern, aside from it being bad, is, like, people like, I don't understand the space guy in the ring. And, like, why is he, like, fighting with aliens and... Like, could that, no, I mean, because no one knew who the hell Green Lantern was. And there have been,
no,
like, fucking...
No, I know, it's just, it makes me sad for, like, the intelligence of audiences these days, but that's a whole other topic.
And we've done that topic, I think, once or twice.
Just I think we touch on it every
week. Ragging on audiences, my word. But at...
Is it time to talk about Dark Knight Rises again?
No, let's talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. Let's go with that one.
That's ours for this year,
Oh, good. So, unless there's... Is there anything else? We didn't talk about sexism, which was... That could have been... we talked about a little bit about it, but one of the things I just briefly wanted to touch on is, like, we were talking about sort of women in action films, and I'm going to be recommending Haywire, and I'll talk a little bit about it when I recommend it, but... One of the sort of the unspoken rules is that in action movies, women can only fight women. Like, a man cannot fight a woman.
like in Fast,
like Fast Six,
or Seven, whatever the hell just came out. Yeah,
Fast Six, or like in so many, like I think in G.I. Joe, like that's the same way it goes, or any other. For most of the time, I mean, it's something, and like you don't really notice it. It's just sort of there. It's just like, oh, that's the matchup, and it's like,
what about Feora in Man of Steel?
Yes, and that was a nice. I mean, Man of Steel has its nice exceptions.
Mm-hmm. She was awesome. I wanted a whole movie about her.
I liked her a lot.
Yeah, she there was almost...
Say what you will about that movie, but I feel like it got the female roles white for, I mean, looking at coming off of Sucker Punch, I think Zack Snyder was like, I gotta get my shit together.
Yeah.
Well, that's the weird thing. I mean, Sucker Punch was it was such a muddled thing. Yeah. I mean, because that's a film that wants to have it both ways. Like, it's like, no, women are like, you know, you're ogling these women, but actually, you know, that's, and apparently that's the Sucker Punch. That's what I've been told is like, you were enjoying this. You were enjoying this, but really you should feel bad about enjoying this. I'm like, you wouldn't have put that much fucking work into it if you didn't enjoy this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you give me 2 hours of like trying to make it enjoyable, and then 1 minute of like, aha, you weren't supposed to enjoy
it's like
that.
The most lavish like upskirts shots, and then it's like, how dare you like that
outside of Japan. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Oh good, oh my. So yeah, that was... But yeah, no, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, and that's sort of bothersome, because like it, and again, like, so I'm glad Man of Steel had that, but it's weird, like you look at Sucker Punch, and like, just do people see that as like, that's female empowerment? And it's like, God, I hope people don't see it that way at all. It's like, no, they're firing guns and killing clockwork Nazis, and like, that's cool, right? No.
I saw someone made an image of if Tomb Raider were played by a guy, and it was a guy wearing like a mankini. He just had, you know, his tiny bottoms on, and then like the suspenders and everything, and it looks ridiculous. And it's like, yeah, but that's what they're doing with the woman. Like, why does she have to be almost naked?
Have you guys seen the video
games? Is a whole other discussion.
Oh God, video games! Jesus Christ.
Well, there's that. But have you guys seen the? I forget what it's called. I want to say it's called Hawkeye, because they take the Hawkeye comic book character.
Oh,
and they,
yeah, I've seen this.
And they like make him very effeminate and put him in the same poses that the female characters are on the front of all these comic books. It's completely hilarious because he looks just ludicrous, just way out of place. Clothes are super, super tight. There's always like these gratuitous like ass shots just front and center in the comic book. Definitely check those out if you want a good laugh. But it's also pretty telling too about the state of the comics industry still.
And somehow these all filter together, and you get people saying Shailene Woodley doesn't look hot. And I don't think any of us wondered why, but in case you were, it's a confluence of horrible things. So hopefully we can move past it. Let's recommend some films that will make people feel better about women in cinema. Katie, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Nicole Hollis in her movie Walking and Talking, which I believe was her first movie. She made it in 1990. Oh, shit. It's either 1995 or 1996. And I should have had the... 1996. It stars Catherine Keener and Anne Heche. And it's this movie about female friendship and these two girls who used to be roommates. And, you know, they're in their late 20s. And one of them moves in with her boyfriend and gets engaged. And it's just about how their relationship goes from there. It's very low on plot, but it's really well acted. It's really funny. And I just saw it for the first time 6 months ago. And, it, you know, it's where girls came from. It's where so much content about women came from since then, and it was really cool going back to the source and to see this really well-acted, really entertaining movie with a very young Liev Schreiber before he was Sabretooth, if that is what you're interested in.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, Walking and Talking. I'll definitely have to check. And what? And she did, oh gosh, that was...
She did Friends with Money. She did Lovely Amazing. Please Give.
That was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, she's directed a bunch of TV as well.
And she almost directed 50-50, and then I guess there was...
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
She directs a lot of New Girl. And again, I mean, I'm not to take over the conversation, but TV's where it's at, man. I mean, that's where all the women and like the strong female stories are.
Yeah, she's directed Parks and Rec as well, you know, Leslie Knope being the greatest female character of the last
year. Oh,
yeah. Probably.
Absolutely.
Yes, so Walking and Talking. Dave, what about you?
My recommendation's probably not going to make anybody feel better about women in the movies, but because it also stars Sandra Bullock in a similar role to that of The Heat, I'm going to go with 2000's Miss Congeniality. Not a great movie, so not going to recommend it based on that. But it is interesting to see this movie and then compare it sort of side by side to The Heat. I feel like there were some scenes that were left in The Heat. We talked earlier that it could have been shorter. I feel like they could have been edited out. There's a scene at a Denny's that has nothing to do with anything except kind of give some laughs.
That scene is hilarious.
It was very, very strange. Very strange. But that scene actually goes back to, and I don't know if this was intentional or not. I'm kind of hoping it was, because if it was, it's a nice tie-in to this particular movie, in Miss Congeniality. So Sandra Bullock stars as this another FBI agent. She's pretty much as unlikable as her character in The Heat, but it's more because she actually has more in common with McCarthy's character from The Heat. She's kind of a slob. She's kind of a tomboy. She's real gruff. She's the opposite of everything you would hold up as a quote-unquote standard of being feminine. And she basically loses a position to another guy in the FBI because she goes against orders. Now, the interesting thing here is she goes against orders because she goes to help prevent a criminal that they just apprehended from choking. And that by itself means absolutely nothing. But when you watch The Heat, that's kind of an interesting tie-in. So I don't know if they did that intentionally or not, but it got my attention. Basically, for throughout the rest of the movie, the reason it's called Miss Congeniality is now she has to go undercover as a beauty queen, basically. She's participating in the 75th annual Miss United States Beauty Pageant. She has to go undercover to sort of root out this terrorist. The plot itself is kind of garbage, but it's interesting to compare her character in Miss Congeniality to that in The Heat and kind of see how those two not really complement each other, but The Heat sort of subverts that. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So if you guys aren't familiar with it, check out 2000's Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock.
Okay. Adam, where do you got?
One of the things that Matt brought up in his review, which I think is really important, is that there's no need for the qualifier of The Heat as a female buddy cop movie. It is a buddy cop movie. It's an action comedy. And so with that said, I'm recommending a 2011 film called Sound of My Voice, which it stars Britt Marling. She co-wrote the screenplay, and it's a psychological thriller. It's driven – like it's a female is in the lead, but there's really no need for the qualifier. The film came out in 2011. And it's this really small film, but it's really, really engaging and kind of intense. It it starts off with this young couple in their 20s are going on kind of an undercover journalism project, and so they decide to infiltrate this cult that's led by a woman named Maggie, who's played by Britt Marling. And Maggie claims to be a time traveler from the year 2054, and it's kind of the film kind of follows their various meetings in the cult. And I won't kind of give away anything else of the film, but it takes a very kind of close-up look into it. You feel like you're in the moment a lot in this movie. And it's directed by Zal Batman Gleej, I think is how you pronounce the last name. I'm not entirely sure, but he co-wrote the screenplay with Britt Marling. And they also recently teamed up on a movie called The East, which Britt Marling stars in with Alexander Skarsgård. And Batman Gleej also directed that. And that's just a really great like kind of socially conscious thriller. And I feel like Britt Marling is becoming a really important voice because she is a female and she is a filmmaker and she's making these movies that star females, but it's not movies that can't be described as like, oh, that's the female born or this is the female this. They're just good movies. And so I highly recommend you seek out Sound of My Voice and also The East. I like The East quite a bit.
Okay, awesome. As I said earlier, my recommendation is Steven Soderbergh's 2012 film Haywire. The film stars Gina Carano as a freelance contract spy working for this company, and she's sent on a mission to Barcelona to free this hostage. And it turns out that she's been burned, and then her company's coming, the company's coming after her, and it's really a standard sort of like, you know, they came after her and she got her revenge. And it's like, it's kind of that standard plot, but it sort of changes the game when you have a female character in the lead role. And one of the things I liked about it is that they cast Carano. She had almost no acting experience, but she's an MMA fighter. So that means they could pretty much use her in all of the fight scenes and she would know it and makes it look real and brutal. And there's one scene where she's fighting Michael Fassbender and it is absolutely brutal. And it sort of forces you to be like, on the one hand, it's like domestic abuse is bad. And like, it's like no one wants to see like women get beaten. And this goes to like the whole woman versus woman thing. It's like, oh, then it's okay. And Haywire challenges that. And it's not like, and it makes you uncomfortable, and it shouldn't in its way, because it's like they're evenly matched. She's better, actually. She's better than him, and she's kicking his ass for most of the fight, but he's still throwing her into stuff, and it's a brutal fight. But at the same time, it's just a really interesting film. At one point, someone says, I've never, Fassbender's like, I've never done a woman before, never killed a woman. And Ewan McGregor's character says, don't think of her as a woman. That would be a mistake. But he's sort of wrong. Like, the film isn't necessarily saying, like, it's not playing up her sexuality really in any way, but at the same time, it's not like, oh, this is just a blank slate and we can plug in anyone else. So I like it. I think it's complicated, and it's also just a really entertaining spy film. Soderbergh brings in that sort of European touch that he brings to his film sometimes, like in Ocean's 12, and it's just really good, and I think Carano carries the film well. So Haywire, I would strongly recommend checking it out. It's on Netflix Instant. So Katie, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun, as is the heat.
Yes. Where can we find you?
Good time.
Yes. Where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich. And you can find my podcast, Operation Kino, at OpKino.
And is that on iTunes? I believe it is. Yes, iTunes. So Operation
Kino. Yeah, and
Kino.
It's a Kino. Kino is the German word for cinema, and it's also the mission in Inglourious Basterds, and that's KINO.
Excellent. So, yes, definitely check out that podcast. And if you want to keep up with our humble podcast, The Collision, you can follow me, Adam, and Dave on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, what is your Twitter handle?
Adam Chitwood.
And Dave?
Dr. Claw, MD.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.